This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
My apologies, Paula. I had forgotten to start the recording.
That's okay. It was just a wonderful meeting. And, you know, my niece drove me up there and she was all decked out and they wear red and white if they are priests. You know, they're just, you know, the Tibetans are more whatever, less subdued, as you probably know, than we are. And people were asking me about Zen and so forth. And they wanted to know what this was. And you know, how Zen, you know, how teachers went through phases of becoming teachers, so on. So they spoke to me in between breaks. And but at the very end, at the beginning, it was called the Invocation of Vajra Yogini. And, you know, there were things that went on, but at the end, my niece had she was doing the bells. She had it was like a tambourine, you know, she was doing those bells. And she was also hitting a drum about that size, you know, going like that. And her best friend, who I knew from way long ago when they were here in San Diego, had a really heavy, her tambourine thing was a drum and a bell thing. And it was really heavy. And she was having a hard time, but she was kind of, she looked like she was smiling, but she told me later, you know, she was doing this and she was like gritting her teeth. It was so heavy. And all the other people were chanting. And I just love the invocation. So it's not a talk about anything. It's calling them to come forth. And I suppose it would be bless this day and this planet and this universe. It was very strong. It reminded me a lot of the Avasamtaka Sutra that we studied with a lot of the teachers and at Jikoji. It was an online event. Anyway, it was. I could feel it. I could feel this ritual. And I mean, I love our heart sutra rituals and I love all these things. This was different. This was, you know, this was wonderful in its own way. It was lively. And the teacher sat there and welcomed her students to come up and ask her questions. She was sitting on something that looked like a throne, but she's quite petite. So she was like in a sort of lawn chair, and she was able to cross her legs, you know, in the lotus position while sitting in the chair. So I'm comparing myself all the time. I'm just sitting in a regular chair, but I really loved it. And they repeated things. I hold a whole page full of the refuge is, I can read a few of them, and because they are poetry, which I will say in English. I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in the Lama, Yidam, and Khandro. I take refuge in the Sa, Lung, Tigle, and their nature, the Bodhicitta. I take refuge in complete openness, lucid presence and compassion. That feels very close. And then this one goes a little in a different direction, a little bit different. Ho, mesmerized by the sheer variety of appearances, which are like the illusory reflections of the moon and water. Beings wander endlessly astray in samsara's vicious cycle. Then this is right below it, different Tibetan words. In order that they may find comfort and ease in the luminosity and all-pervading space of the true nature of their minds, I generate immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and equanimity and of the awakened mind, the heart of bodhicitta. Oh, it's 20 pages long. So some of them, the ones we did before the drums, et cetera, were like that. And I think at some point, the drums and cymbals came in toward the end. But always it repeated the 100,000 dakinis, the 100,000 dakinis coming. And it wasn't to give anything to us. It was to just awaken the whole earth, the whole universe, and come down. And I get the feeling it was like the bodhisattvas. So I wasn't there for the whole day. They'd had breakout groups and everything, and they hadn't seen each other in a long time. So it was a wonderful experience. And and I thought, wow, I only come to Jikoji. It had been years before I came to Jikoji because I was worried about COVID flying up or otherwise. And so when I came last time, I was great to do the poetry and Zen in the Zendo there while you're sitting. And I hope to come again soon because there's nothing like it. There's nothing like being in this kind of way-seeking mind company. And I love Jikoji, and I'm so grateful for the people that are keeping it going. Thank you. So I thought there might not be a whole lot of people, but I did bring some poems to read interspersed. I think I could probably get up and find more, but I am, and I will if I need to. Here's one. Okay. Who wants to start? I'll tell you the people I can see. Akbar, Randy, Sylvia, Chris, Angie's son, and did I say everyone? Yeah. Sylvia, I can't see her face. Hi, Sylvia. I remember you. Chris, I can't see your face. Maybe you left already. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, your volume's not on either. So, who would like to come up and read a poem? Who in our online audience would like to read a poem? All these people are getting ready. Come up. Hi, Randy. It's great to see you. Can't hear you. Go like this. We can't hear you.
Maybe that's his poem.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, what you said with way-seeking mind, being in the company of way-seeking mind, that it takes so many forms in so many places. And in my life here during COVID and post-COVID and all that, I listen to a lot of music while I'm in my studio. And I think that's where I'm getting a lot of my Dharma yeah, a lot of my Dharma from, you know, people like John Prine or Townes Van Sant or Gillian Welsh. But there's this song that by Steve Earle that I keep repeating in my car all the time. And there's one lyric in here. I said, oh my God, that sounds like Buddhism. And what isn't Buddhism? That's the question that I have. But the lyrics go, it's called St. Louis, the name of the song is Fort Worth Blues by Steve Earle. And it's a song about Townes Van Sant, who was a friend of his that died. And anyway, it's a song about his life, but there's a little section there that goes,
Randy,
somewhere up beyond.
Can you somehow get the microphone closer to your face? Because I can't hear you still. I can hear you, but I can't hear the exact words.
And Paul,
okay, let me
check your own volume on your computer, because we're hearing him real clearly here.
Okay. Good now?
Can anybody closer. Offer advice to Randy what he can do? Is it?
Thanks, Paula. We're hearing him very clearly. Maybe the volume on your own computer, Paula, could be turned up so that it's broadcasting a bit louder, because we're hearing him very clearly.
Can you hear me? How is it now, Paula?
You're on and off. I think when you have your face right up to the microphone, so you need to hold up the poem probably higher so you can keep your mouth by the microphone.
Dribbled on
I meant hold it up so we can hear you read it. But I'd also like to see the poem. It looks like a circle.
Okay. Here's this part on the Great Divide, where the sky is wide and the clouds are few. A man can see his way clear to the light. Just hold on tight. That's all you got to do. And then he goes on and on from there into some other stuff. But yeah, that's something I think during this last few years has been a good message. And just hold on tight. Just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep going. And so that's my poem. That's not my poem. That's from Steve Earle's song, Fort Worth Blues.
Well, we did get to hear that. Thank you. I'm so glad.
Did it come across or not?
Good.
Yeah, we heard you well here in the Zoom. Randy, thank you.
Okay, yeah. It's I'm just amazed at the different ways you can get the teachings beyond books about Zen. I think that's what I'm exploring more and more, especially during the pandemic. So, okay, thank you.
Sylvia? No? You can go run look when no one's looking until we're finished. Daryl? Daryl.
Are you?
Q? Daryl.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Good.
Good. Glad to hear that. I have a short poem this time, not so much a page turner as the last one. It's called Mama, Where You Keep Your Gun. If I Had My Way, I've Been a Killer by Nina Simone. In a box of baby pictures and green books, old issues of Jet gave stock above. Death by day or death come close. Next to the Bible, full of obituaries, hints ride from here to Virginia, from now to 1676. At the temple of my enemies, wearing the face of my enemies, wearing the face of their fathers. At the bay where the last indentured servant kissed salt water before taking notice, taking aim. As a gris-gris between banknotes and abandoned bras, don't know when, but know I would. In the closet beneath cobwebs hides the sails above the first ships carrying the first of us. Death at the bay, death come close. Where I mind my black ass business at. A breeze, the smell of salt keeps from the muzzle, seeps from the muzzle. I keep it thus, I is the crime. Where rebellion evolves, the tantrum. In a lockbox under my bed, where the past writes and bursts our symbiont present future. Where to reach for the gun is to reach for safety in retrograde.
That's has a resonance with me. I think that's one of the poems I was coming across when I was looking for poems. It just seemed right. I'm so glad that you read that.
Thank
I'd
you.
Also like to see your face. Is that asking too much?
Let's look to the own. You'll see me.
So, Akbar? Akbar, are you there? I will read one that seems similar to me from a few. Actually, I have a few from Lucille Clifton, a poet I've been admiring. She lived in Santa Cruz when I was there, and I got to read on the stage with her, you know, one at a time we read. And I think that's the first time I heard her read. So that was probably about decades ago. I don't need to go into it, but she's a Black woman with really short hair. The last I saw her, and I don't know if she's still alive, but I have some more. This is the first poem called Climbing. A woman proceeding up the long rope, her dangling braids the color of rain. Maybe I should have had braids. Maybe I should have kept the body I started, slim and possible as a boy's bone. Maybe I should have wanted less. Maybe I should have ignored the bowl in me burning to be filled. Maybe I should have wanted less. The woman passes the notch in the rope, mark 60. I rise toward it, struggling, hand over hungry hand. I really shouldn't be going through just trying to choose them, but there.
Paula?
This one's called Sam. If he could have kept the sky in his dark hand, he would have pulled it down and held it. It would have called him Lord, as did the skinny women in Virginia. If he could have gone to school, he would have write his story and not live it. If he could have done better, he would have stars and stripes forever. What did you do to my father? Let her read the Clark. She has two Clark Kent poems. And, you know, of course, I loved Superman as Clark Kent on television as well. Okay. I think she'd said something else to Clark. This is called Further Note to Clark. This is the part at the beginning, just a little thing. Do you know how hard this is for me? Do you know what you're asking? What I can promise to be is water, water plain and direct as Niagara, unsparing of the cliff I batter, but also unsparing of you. Tourist, the question for me is, how long can I cling to this edge? The question for you is, what have you ever traveled toward more than your own safety? And this is final note to Clark. They had it wrong, the old comics. You are only Clark Kent after all. Oh, mild-mannered mister, why did you think you could fix it? How you must have wondered to see me taking chances, dancing on the edge of words, pointing out the bad guys, dreaming your X-ray vision could see the beauty in me. What did I expect? What did I hope for? We are who we are, two faithful readers, not Wonder Woman and not Superman. Here's another Superman. I'm sorry. Sweet Jesus, Superman. If I had seen you dressed in your blue suit, I would have known you. Did I already read this? Maybe that choir boy Clark could stand around listening to stories, but not you, not with Metropolis to save and every crook in town filthy with kryptonite. Lord, man of steel, I understand the cape, the leggings, the whole ball of wax. You can trust me. There is no planet stranger than the one I'm from. Is there someone who's willing to come up and read a poem now? I see you all.
Paula, I have a question about some of the things you just read. Can you hear me?
I'll try again.
Great. So the mic, I can't see you. Yeah, right. Thank you.
Hi, Paula. I appreciate those Lucille Clifton poems you just read. And can you hear me now? You can't hear me. Okay.
I could hear you before when you tested.
Okay.
Is that Microsoft?
You have to get really close to the mic, just like Randy did.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Is there any chance you have a volume control on your computer? You could turn up the speaker on your computer? No?
I don't know if you're talking to me or reading the poem, but is the mic like up high so you can't reach it, or can you get tilted toward you more like Randy did?
So the mic is right here at the computer, so I'm about as close as I can be. Do you maybe have a speaker volume control on your computer that you could turn up? You can't hear me, can you?
I could turn my speaker up. Yeah.
How's that? Is that any better? Testing. Do you have a volume?
I can hear it.
You can. Good. That's it. Thank you. That helps.
I don't know about other people.
Yeah, we're hearing you just fine. So I have a question about the Lucille Clifton poems. So one of the lines that caught my ear was, maybe I should have wanted less. And that reminded me of my own journey to try to find the middle way between listening to what I want and sometimes saying, is that just a preference, or is that something that's just frivolous, or is it important? And I'm wondering if you can give me any guidance in how to tell the difference, or how to be patient and wait until it's clear whether or not what I want is frivolity or is something coming from the heart.
Well, speaking for Lucille, which I can't do, she's a very profound person, but I got the fact that she's a woman and that she's a Black woman born way before, Black women were writing and known about, and maybe I should have wanted more. To me, that's a maybe, but it's like looking back at her life and thinking about maybe she should not have settled for so little.
Paula, I'm recalling that her line was, maybe I should have wanted less.
Maybe I should have wanted less. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Maybe I should have wanted less. Let me read it again. Okay.
Okay.
Or you, because you can't remember it, I can find it.
Of course, I came after her line where she was recalling her younger body. It's different now when she's writing this poem.
Oh yeah, that's the first poem. I'll read it again to remind people.
Okay, thanks.
I think the woman is ahead of her up the long rope. And she's thinking, maybe I should have been, her dangling braids, the color of rain. Maybe I should have had braids. Maybe I should have kept the body I started. Slim and possible as a boy's bone. I would think of the body I started as when she was young. Don't know. I don't try to interpret, speak for the author, but, slim and possible. She was not slim by the time I knew her. She was round and beautiful. But yeah, maybe I should have wanted less. And she's sounding like she's still hungry in her way. Maybe I should have wanted less than just to be filled in that bowl. A woman passes the notch in the rope, Mark 60. I rise toward it, struggling, hand over hungry hand. It sounds like at the end, she's hungry and she's rising toward it. Rising toward something that she's hungry for, finally. Does that sound one interpretation?
Yeah, thank you, Paula. I think Chuck may have some have a haiku that he.
I do have.
Read the first line wrong. That's why. That's why I couldn't get it. Great. It's like a telephone, really. I'm holding this up.
Hello, Paula. Can you hear me?
Hey there.
Oh, you can hear me. That's good. It's fall, so we have a fall haiku.
Leave. Can't hear you.
You can't?
You have to get closer to the microphone and raise it up or whatever you have to do.
Do, if you say so. How's that?
No.
Should I use my best church voice so you can hear me in the back pews?
I'm saying this for other people, too, that are online. Can you hear it, Randy? Randy can hear you, so.
Okay, Randy's good.
No.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Breaks up occasionally.
Okay. The winds that blow, ask them which leaf of the tree will be the next to go.
Wait a minute.
It's leaves. The winds that blow.
Oh, this one works better, but it's breaking up still.
Okay. The winds that blow, ask them which leaf of the tree will be the next to go.
No one wants to know. Is that the end?
No, they don't.
No. I'm going to get Balin to come do something with my computer, but I don't know if he can to make the sound go.
Randy, did you hear it? I presume other people heard.
I'll be right back.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paula.
Taking a break.
I'll come back, do it again if you want.
Good job. Sure. Thanks, Chuck.
Oh, sure.
I can't get Eric's. I've been having trouble getting people on the mics. So how do I make the sound louder on here? I've tried this and it didn't work.
You don't see the sound as well, girl.
Okay. If you say it again and someone else heard you, if Randy heard you, for instance, then Randy could read your poem.
Great.
Or someone whose mic has been working.
Yeah.
Give it a shot, Todd.
Testing. Is this any better, Paula, or about the same? Okay. Yeah. I think everyone in Zoom land can hear just fine. So I'm going to invite Todd maybe to share a poem also. I'm sorry that you can't hear well, Paula. It's the best we can do. Okay.
Right now I can't hear you again.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that if Randy could hear you, because he's not at Jikoji, he could read it.
Okay, we could try that.
Oh, now I can hear you. Okay, it comes in and out.
Yeah, something intermittent in your system, perhaps.
In my system, okay.
Yeah, loose wire, or don't know. How about now? Are you hearing me now?
Yes.
Oh, hurrah. Okay.
Okay, Eric, come up again.
Anybody keep it a go?
Chuck's prodding me.
Okay.
Okay. I want to say, can you hear me now, Paula? Yeah, I want to say this is in itself, to me, impromptu.
You put your mask off too, Eric. I don't think you're near anyone. Yeah.
So to me, this is very spontaneous, and I come from visual language, so this is poetry in itself as we're, doing this. So I sort of appreciate that.
Yeah.
So what made me spark was I carry around these index cards. Because being older, I tend to forget things, so I write them down. So I figured, well, maybe this is more appropriate as poetry because to open up the whole definition of what it might be, right?
Yeah.
So as I said, last night I went to a party, and there was a band with one of my closest buddies I've known for probably 53 years. And he's a violinist with gigantic fingers, like sausage fingers, but he plays the fiddle. And he's a well driller, 300 pounds. And he's always played music as long as I've known him, but it's only recently that he's gotten out actually onto a stage. And he now sings and plays other, and he's recognizing, I think, something that I've been a part of as a visual artist, being sort of on the outskirts, you know, where I think he gets maybe with his band playing 2 hours, they might get something to eat from the people, right? So there's some other motivation, right, that why you are here, maybe doing poetry as an art form, you know. And so I'm just going to wrote down what I said to him. His name is Danny. I said, maybe now a real sense of what it takes to be a professional musician, the real work and time and mental, emotional commitment to it. Can you transfer now what you know of this genre of art to what it takes as a serious visual artist commitment or a literary artist commitment? And then I work as a carpenter. I have this other list for Laura Olson. I need to get 20 feet of flashing and siding with 5/16. So I could then read Rumi to maybe bring it more into a formal context, if you like. I just went up to
David. I thought that was a poem. It was a really good poem, and that's a good way to do it, you know, carrying index cards. But now I'd like to hear what you're going to say about Rumi.
Well, I came to the conclusion not too long ago, maybe about 5 years ago here, after sitting for a little while, what isn't poetry?
The newspaper? Politics sect. It can be poetry if you mess around with it, like I do. Take little phrases, but that's just what I'd say.
Okay. So this is just got a book out of, because Chuck is quite a motivator, out of the library at Jokoji. So it's a Rumi poem, and I don't know. I just picked it out because I like laughing. So the title is called "Dying Laughing." A lover was telling his beloved how much he loved her, how faithful he had been, how self-sacrificing, getting up at dawn every morning, fasting, giving up wealth and strength and fame, all for her. There was a fire in him. He didn't know where it came from, but it made him weep and melt like a candle. "We've done it. We've done well," she said. "You've done well," she said, "but listen to me. All this is the decor of love, the branches and leaves and blossoms. You must live at the root to be a true lover." "Where's that? Tell me." "You've done the outward acts, but you haven't died. You must die." When he heard that, he lay back on the ground, laughing, and died. He opened like a rose that drops to the ground and died laughing. That laughter was his freedom and his gift to the eternal. As moonlight shines back at the sun, he heard the call to come home and went. When light returns to its source, it takes nothing of what it has illuminated. It may have shone on a garbage dump or a garden or in the center of a human eye, no matter. It goes, and when it does, the open plain becomes passionately desolate, wanting it back. So thank you, I guess, or Rumi.
Yeah, I was reading through Rumi earlier too. You want to drag someone else up, Eric? Or
Come on. You got some index cards.
But I don't think Paul ever got to hear the situation with the leaf properly.
The what?
He wants me to go
and
do the haiku again.
Oh, okay.
Haiku, okay, love it.
Very well.
Thank you, Chuck.
And it's really short, so you can memorize it.
It is short. I could memorize it if I had my life.
Hi, Paula. Good to see you. Hi.
You too. Stopping
in today. Here we have a haiku, The Autumn of Life. Nearing autumn's close, my neighbor now, what is it that he does?
Yeah.
Of course, that's not the one I originally had, but that's the good thing about haikus. You could just like pick out different ones. Let's see, where was the one I originally had? It has disappeared.
It was
the wind and the leaves, and then which leaf will be the last to go? You must ask the wind.
Yeah.
But we'll just do one with clouds. Oh, here we go. Clouds. Clouds come from time to time and bring to men a chance to rest from looking at the moon.
Yeah. Thank you. Again, I feel this way. It's not like I have to say I'm not psychic, but I read these things, you know, frequently, and I can sit, you know, those are resounding to me again. I think it happens, even though we're distant. I'm glad to know that. Really glad. That was wonderful.
No, I got one more.
Go ahead.
Okay. So my name is Todd, and Angie and her sons, Toby and Chris, are very close to me. And I was here when you were, I don't know, whatever it was, you were ordained and hitting a stick. So it's in your... Anyway, I also was living in a house where there was a man writing poetry. His name was Tail Thomas.
Tail.
And he said, to do or not to do? It takes, in theory, it takes 20 minutes to do the dishes. In practice, 25. In reality, a lifetime. Okay. So that's because the lunch bell is coming and we're going to have to do dishes afterwards.
Time to adjourn yet?
I think so.
I think it is. It's 12:30. But if you still...
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.